As I remember, California State Polytechnic College presents the recollections and impressions of another distinguished retired staff member. This one is Harry Parker. Harry, what year was it that you left your native Scotland and decided to make your fortune and living in the western part of the world here?
Oh, I came in 1920.
And, but not to California?
No, I came to Canada first, and then a little while in New York State, a little over a year in New Hampshire, and then a little over 8 years in West Virginia at the Hillcrest Farms. And I went to Illinois for a while, and then to California.
And that would have been about 10 years after you left Canada.
Yeah.
Who did you start working for in California?
William Briggs at Dixon.
And that was up in the area of the Purple Circle, where there was lots of good livestock,
yeah,
particularly cattle and sheep up there.
Was right in it.
I want to find out how you found out about Cal Poly and how you happened to come down here. What were the circumstances that led to your coming down here, Harry?
Well, when I left William Briggs's, J.I. Thompson, he called me and said he would like to see me, and I went over to see him, and he just asked me to come to Cal Poly. And I didn't think that a school job would suit me very good, so I didn't take it for a while, but he got after Alec McDonald and George Phillips, two friends of mine, you know, that worked up at Davis. So I finally decided to come here, and I came here in 1932.
And Tommy was working there near Davis at the time he first contacted you?
Yeah, he was at the Stralock Farm.
Mm-hmm. And then he came down to Cal Poly that summer, the same summer he
talked
to you.
Yeah.
Okay, then you and your brother went into sheep operation up in Sutter Buttes, and Tommy kept after you and these other fellows. And
that's
finally
it.
You decided that maybe a school experience wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah.
Maybe the sheep business wasn't too good then, Harry?
No, it wasn't too good right at the time, but it picked right up right after that.
Right after you left it, it picked
up.
Yeah. Okay, then you came down here in 1932, and your job was instruction in animal husbandry, and especially looking after the purebred beef herd and also some of the project work of the students. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bart Shepherd was down here then, and he was teaching some animal husbandry.
Yeah, he was the head of the department.
Mm-hmm. And the students at that time already had developed quite a little background in showing, but on a junior level. Is that right?
Yeah, first of all, we showed in the FFA, and the first year we went to Los Angeles, we won everything in the Future Farmers and pretty near everything in the open. Well, that ended us showing in the Future Farmers from then on.
But later on, they did participate in some more of the junior shows at the Cow Palace.
Yeah, but we had a special division of our own,
they
call the Advanced Division.
Mm-hmm. And it was very soon that there was a Grand Champion steer up there, isn't that right?
Yeah, yeah. I still remember the first Champion steer in Los Angeles was in 1933. He brought $1.31 a pound. And Collier Burris was the boy that had the project.
Mm-hmm. And was Henry Alberti the winner at the Cow Palace or at the junior show?
No, Henry was a dairy student.
I see.
He didn't have any beef projects.
Didn't have any beef projects
no.
here. Well, I guess that he took his steer up from Las Banas High School. I think.
Yeah, I think probably that was right. Yeah.
Harry, what were the facilities here at San Luis Obispo for animal husbandry and particularly beef production?
Well, it's a little bit funny. When I came here to look at the place before I took the job, J.I. Thompson, he took me around, and there was an old shed, you know, back off the buildings a little ways that had been used as a county fairground. So we looked around quite a bit, so I asked him where the show barn was, where we were going to fit these steers. And he says, well, I hate to tell you, but you're standing in it. And all it was an open shed and two or three big corrals. But we went to work and made pens in it and smaller corrals, and it made a real good place to fit steers.
Was there some old buildings nearby where you could store a little feed there, were there?
Yeah, there was one old building just below it. Mm-hmm. I forget what they called it now, but it had been some exhibition building at the old county fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, for the next several years, financially, the college was, or the school was having some difficulty, and everybody had to dig in and make do with the best they could with what we had. Is that right?
Yeah, but it was real good for the boys, too, because we ran out of help a lot of times, and we even filled our own silos. Some of it we did in school time, and some we did in our own time, but we filled our own silos. And everybody worked then.
And the boys got a lot of the real kind of practical experience they were going to need to go out and make it on their own in the livestock world.
Yeah, they did. And they all did well, too, those boys, after they got out.
Now, at the same time that you were working with projects, you were beginning to help develop the school of purebred herds, particularly in beef cattle. What were some of the steps, maybe some of the bulls or some of the broodstock that we got then?
Well, we had some pretty nice Hereford cows here. We went to Briggs's and we got a bull. And that started us off there pretty good, but they'd had a real good Hereford bull before I got here, and he was the sire of that champion steer in Los Angeles, and also quite a few other good steers that was down there. But he was been sold to Andy Jockin. They got him from the Hearst Ranch. The Shorthorn herd wasn't too big or too good, and we went to Dibley's and to the University of Davis and got some good females. And then a few years later, we got a bull from the Treasure Island World's Fair, a Canadian bull from the University of Alberta, and he got us going in the shorthorn business pretty good then. And we didn't have any Angus at all whilst I was here.
Not while you were on the campus?
No.
There were no Angus, no breeding Angus at all?
No, we used to buy Angus steers and show them, but we didn't have any Angus breeding cattle at all.
Mm-hmm. And for a while, were you able to get enough feeder calves out of the poly herd for the shows, or did you have to go out and get them?
No, we went out and bought quite a few. We used all of our own, but we also bought quite a few on the outside.
Mm-hmm. And that came about as a result of this project fund and the foundation and so on, that you were able to go out and buy quite a number at a time, and then you could resell them to the boys. Is that the way it was?
Yeah, that's the way it was.
And that was certainly a good opportunity for boys, rather than to have to go and many hundred miles perhaps and pick out a steer or two.
Yeah.
And what did you have then to keep these calves in and so on up to the time they were going on feed and so on? Did you have any other facilities at all?
Oh, we had little pastures, and then there was an old barn and a pasture over where I lived on the Morrow Road, and we built some lots around the creek bed, and we used to start them off there, and there was lots of shade there, and it was a real nice place.
And that, for considerable length of time, kind of became the show barn
over there.
And then they tore those old county fair buildings down as the college began to expand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're real short on cattle range in the early days, is that right?
Yeah, we didn't have too much.
Then what happened in the way of getting more land? Did that come along in a little bit?
Well, the Serrano Ranch came up for lease, and I knew the owner of it, and he tried to lease it to me, and I told the school about it, and right about the time that they were dickering for this thing, this owner said he would sell it, and I don't know all the details about what happened, but they had Mr. Walter Wells said he would buy it for him, and I think he did buy it, and then they leased it from him for a year or two, and then finally bought it, and that was a big help. And then later years after I left, they got the Peterson place. And then part of the army camp, and so that more than doubled or trebled what we used to have in the old days as far as pasture was concerned.
And probably from your knowledge of what they have today, they probably have adequate pasture for the program that they're carrying on now. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. I think they've got a real setup now for a commercial deal and purebred deal. They've got a real good rounded out beef program.
Harry, in those early days, as you say, everybody pitched in and helped, and you got to know the students probably much better then than anybody does today. Can you think of some of the interesting boys or some of the outstanding ones that you had in those early days, and maybe some that have gone on into cattle business?
Oh, I can remember every one of them that there was in that first year or two, and then as the school got bigger, why, then I couldn't. In fact, I think I remembered every boy that was in the school, or I knew every boy that was in the school, no matter what he was taking in those days. But some of the outstanding students that were in our beef animal husbandry deal was Bill Owens and Collier Burris. They were both from Red Bluff. And one of them, Bill Owens, he runs a big outfit up there now, just followed in his father's footsteps. And Collier Burris, he's probably running one of the real good big outfits there is in that area, the Holmes place. And most of those boys, they went out and did real good. Those two I remember real well.
What about Earl Foore? Is he still in
business? Yeah, Earl Foore, he did real, real good. He wasn't there that first year or so, but he's done real good, and he's up just south of Red Bluff now. He has the old Stanford ranch.
Did you have any of the Norton boys, or are they gone by the time you came here?
No, the Par Norton was just through when I came.
And he's still in the livestock business?
Yeah,
up
he's
in Oregon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And John Gilley?
Yeah, he came a little later too, but he's done real good. He went home and developed some of their own ranches, and he's done real well over at Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm. Did Bob Bowman take any animal husbandry classes? Do you remember him?
Yeah, but he was more of a hog man than he was beef or sheep. I had the sheep too for the first year or two, and we used to do pretty good with them too. And Bob was more of a hog man than he was sheep or beef.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly was an outstanding boy.
Yes,
and
he was.
Became a national president of the Future Farmers of America.
Yeah.
Well, then, Harry, along toward the end of the 30s and in the 40s, you began to get more facilities in the way of buildings and so on.
Yeah.
What were some of those buildings?
Oh, we got a whole new beef unit built. And I was never too happy with it. Somehow it just didn't seem like the old building there. It was a lot of things were unhandy about it, but it finally worked out all right. And then we got a new beef feeding shed down along the creek just below the new beef unit. That was pretty good for feeding car lot things, but a good carload still came out of those two old lots along the creek out by the Morrow Road, where the shade was, and they weren't bothered, and all our show loads came out of there.
Mm-hmm. And along in this new beef feeding unit too, down near the feed mill, they began to just feed out commercial cattle to
give
the students experience
that's
of
right.
that.
And that that's a good setup too.
You still on the staff when they built the show, the judging pavilion up there?
No, I'd gone by then.
That has certainly been a fine thing for the college and also for the groups that come in here, cattlemen and so on.
Oh yeah, that's a wonderful thing. That's we hold our annual bull sale there, and the Future Farm and Judging Contest held there. It's just a wonderful building.
Harry, I know that the beef operations, as well as everything else, had to adjust themselves to changes that came about as a result of World War II, but I guess the showing continued with the few students we had.
Oh, yeah, and we did very well, too. I remember one real good shorthorn steer we had. I still remember him as one of the good steers I ever knew. And a boy named Bill Marksmiller had him and showed him, and he was champion steer in Los Angeles. I think he sold for down $3 a pound. I'm not sure of that, but I think it was around $3. And then we had reserves champion steer the same year, and that was a boy named Walkup. I think he was from San Francisco. And the full brother to that steer was the champion steer in Los Angeles the following year. And we just didn't have much help to do all this in those days. But the boys all got in and worked, and we did a lot of work during class times, and we got by just pretty good.
Well, I know that at one time the enrollment of civilian students here was down to between 50 and 60, so there couldn't have been very many in the animal husbandry department at that time.
No, we just didn't have very many.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to shows, as I recall, some of the most interesting experiences of my life were sitting around in the evening after some of the shows when you and some of the other herdsmen, particularly those from the old country, used to get together and Tommy and so on and talk about the shows over the years. Harry, because of these people getting older and passing on, has just about become a thing of the past. Isn't that right?
Yes, it has. And the show thing is a lot different than it used to be. All the herdsmen stayed in the barns, and they visited in the evenings and talked about their cattle, but now they all have to go to hotels and all that.
They drive their Cadillacs back and forth to the show.
Yeah. So a lot of that's kind of done away with, and it's kind of a shame, too, I think.
Who of this grand old crew are still left besides yourself?
Well, Stuart Cooper, he's alive. And by gosh, he's about the only one that I know of.
Yes, I know that over the years that a great many
of them about all gone.
Passed on. Now, Harry, in the later part of your work at Cal Poly, you got some land of your own, or leased some land, and you began to look to your future, too, and develop your own beef herd. How did that start out?
Well, there were two students here, one by the name of John Gilly and another Henry Lang. And Henry had a few hogs, and John had a little money, and we went together and formed a little kind of a company, and I had a few cows, and it just grew and grew. So when the war was over, Henry Lang, he wanted to get out and go on his own. He wanted to be a dry farmer, wanted to raise a lot of barley. So he pulled out, and he went up to Bradley, I think, and started raising barley up there and did real well. And then John Gilly went in the Army, and when he came out of the Army, why, he wanted to go over to his folks' ranches over around Buttonwillow and Bakersfield. So he left some cows here for a long time, was going to take them, but he never did, so I finally bought his cows. And he still hasn't got any cows, but he does real good in sheep and hogs over there, and he raises alfalfa, and he's done real well.
And your first operations were on rented land?
Yeah.
Some of it out towards Morro Bay, up to that San Bernardo Creek?
Is up that San Bernardo Creek. We had three different ranches up there at one time.
I remember it was a great place. I visited
it was
up there, a beautiful place.
Very good, yeah.
And then you had some land here just off the Los Osos Road that you leased down here too, on the opposite side from where you are now?
Oh, the only thing there, we used to lease the stubble there in the summertime. We'd drive the cattle down with horses, you know, down San Bernardo Creek, and then we'd cross over into Los Osos and bring them down. But we never had any permanent lease, only stubble leases in here until we bought this place here that we're on now.
Did you lease this place first, Harry, and then
no,
you bought it right
no,
out?
No, I bought it, yeah.
Uh-huh. How many acres of land are there here?
750.
Uh-huh. And you keep about how many head of cattle on it?
On this place here,
uh-huh.
I can keep about 100 head of cows.
And this is primarily for your breeding herd?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you also did fed out and pastured out quite a few steers as you were developing. Do you still continue with that?
No, we don't do that anymore, but I got another place out by Morro Bay where I run quite a few cows. Mm-hmm. And we just pick the calves up at weaning time and bring them home here and just leave the cows up there.
Mm-hmm. At one time, did you have some cattle out on what's now the state park property, Montaña de Oro, or next to it there?
Yeah, we had that for several years, too. And I used to buy cows in Arizona and put on there, and they used to do real well. Mm-hmm.
That's another beautiful piece of property out
yes,
there.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that every time you see a new building out this way and so on, you wonder how long it's going to be before you're surrounded by San Luis Obispo?
Oh, yeah, they keep moving that city limit sign a little closer every year or two.
Well, it has its disadvantages and its advantages. I expect your taxes go up, but...
Yeah, too much.
But as you look into the future, if you can hang on that long, this will be a tremendously valuable piece of property.
Yeah, I suppose it will.
Yeah, sure. But your heart's in the cattle business and not in the
subdivision
business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Another aspect of your life, Harry, I know, has been judging beef cattle at some of the great shows in the country. Many in California, and where else have you gone, some of the big shows?
Oh, I've judged the Royal in Kansas City and the International in Chicago, Denver twice, and Portland two or three times, Phoenix two or three times, Great Falls, State Fair of Texas at Dallas, and the Southwestern Exposition of Fort Worth two or three times, in Tulsa, and a good many state fairs.
Well, those certainly are the great fairs in the beef cattle business, and I know that your wonderful reputation you had for being able to correctly place these animals and your reputation for fairness and so on was a great factor in your being selected, and I know that you were tremendously successful. Do you see today a considerable change in showing and beef cattle business over, say, 20 or 25 years ago?
Yeah, there's a lot of change. The expense of exhibiting cattle now has just got so high that there's not too many people can do it anymore. And all expenses went up, and the prize money stays the same, in some places not even as much. So it just makes it prohibitive for a lot of people to be able to do that anymore.
There's a tremendous expanse in the big feedlot operations here, particularly in the West. Have they made any difference in, for instance, buying project steers or in the training that the students get today?
Well, I don't know just exactly what you mean by the training. You mean the...
In the college and so on. In other words... 30 years ago, we were thinking in terms of animal husbandry primarily about boys going back and going in with themselves or with their dads or smaller operations. And today, they're looking out at possibly going in with feedlot operations with 50,000 head. What are some of those changes?
Well, the education they get now at Pauley, you know, on this feedlot business is an education that nobody knew anything about, by God, 25 or 30 years ago. And it's a future farmer movement on these boys feeding these steers that started this whole feeding program in California. And I think Bakersfield High School is a big example of that. They took cold potatoes they were throwing away and made cattle feed out of them. And they took beans and all kinds of cull products that were being thrown away and made cattle feed out of them. And I just credit them and Cal Poly's Future Farmer Program on feeding these steers that really started this cattle feeding program in California.
Well, it certainly is true that today the housewife can go to just about any market and get much finer meat than she could 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things wrong with the thing, too. The people that are raising these things, they just don't get their fair share of it. As I say, as an example, when wages were 2 bits a pound, 2 bits an hour. Steak was 2 bits a pound. But now wages are $3 or $4 an hour, but the steak isn't $3 or $4 a pound, and there's a big difference there.
Well, there certainly is a big difference in what the producer gets out.
That's the whole thing, yes. It's all out of whack.
Mm-hmm. That, like you say, the outlook of a boy coming out, a young fellow coming out of college, and the expense of buying or even the ability to lease land today is pretty difficult, and so a great many of them have to look to employment in some farm like feedlots or some of these things.
Yeah, that's right, they do.
And this then probably calls for considerable addition, some additional science and other things that go with the more complicated system of feeding out cattle in a feedlot. Now, Harry, let's see if we can go out here in the corral and pick up some of the noise so dear to the cattleman's heart, the sound of the calves getting hungry and getting ready to have their dinner and so on. Background of this pleasant sound of the calves hungering for their evening meal, we'll come bring this program to a close. This program of As I Remember. This interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.